first plan, we had set a target of 1.5 million of people who will be served with water. Against that target, 1.25 million received water in the last financial year. There has been an improvement of 59% since 1994. Sorry. This really shows an improvement of 94% from 94. However, we all know that there are still serious challenges in meeting the 208 target. When it comes to sanitation, our target for the last financial year was 350,000 households to receive basic sanitation, and the achievement in that regard is 200,000 people. We still have 14.3 million without access. Coming to the bachelor education program, share, I will speak more to this tomorrow. There has been a double in terms of a delivery rate compared to last year. We managed to eradicate about 71,000 buckets in the last financial year. Yes. Schools, share, this program has not been doing well at all. And it is in this context that we managed to persuade National Treasury to give the funding to the department to actually implement. So these are the figures in terms of what has been achieved. We hope that next year, when we have the allocation, we should be able to report better progress. I think something which was really an achievement, because it was a hassle for National Treasury, first of all, the Department of Education and the Department of Health to actually agree that they are having serious capacity program and to agree to give the program to us. But we managed through our good working relations and negotiation skills to convince all of them that we can come in and assist the department. Free basic water, I know the committee is very concerned about this one. And even though we're saying there has been an increasing number of people who benefited, but this figure has not improved. And this could be sticking to the issues that the members have talked to initially, the fact that the maintenance of the infrastructure is a challenge throughout the country. The ability of the municipalities, for instance, to do proper groundwater management during periods of drought is a problem. And that is why, co-chair, sometimes we advise the municipalities to cut water when there are just no services because of poor operation and maintenance. And this is why you would come into contact with incidents that you referred to earlier on, which, by the way, are totally undesirable as they are not sustainable and they are very expensive. Drinking water quality, a program of focus in the department. We have made this part of our 2010 initiative. We are saying by 2010, drinking water quality in all the municipalities should have improved. Share progress in this regard has been very good, especially because we have increased the number of sites where we are taking the samples. So there has been very good progress. We have reviewed the strategy. And that strategy, one of the key pillars of the strategy is that it places a lot of responsibility to political leadership within the municipalities. Service quality. So this is one achievement that we're really proud of. For the first time as a department, we have put the importance of customer, the quality of the service, on the agenda of local government. And we did a survey just to raise awareness, to say to municipalities, it's not only about putting infrastructure on the ground. You also have a responsibility to ensure that the quality of that infrastructure is up to scratch. And these are the results. Here you can see provinces that are doing very well, and you can see those that are struggling. I'm also speaking to Terry in this slide. I know the chair has been particularly worried about this one, just to show the increases in the tariffs. And generally, chair, we could say within the fact that really matters, there has been an average of 8%, and the highest percentage is where you find your yes. Local government support. a program that we also proud. But Chair, I need to make a point and need to speak to the question that was raised. This is one of the areas where we rely on consultants, because we have targets that you will not forgive us if we don't meet, and we don't have the resources. So we have to make use of the private sector to make sure. And the deployment of those engineers, and we have upscaled, it's now 10, we have 21 engineers who are running support programs in the municipalities, is one of the initiatives. And on support, we have been worried about our ability to monitor progress on the ground and to make sure that quality is adhered to. We are proud to say we do have now monitoring and evaluation units within its regional office. The capacity varies. Chair, I will not speak to all these. It's such a pity, because our teams have been really working hard, and when I told them that we would be reporting on their achievements, everybody was excited, but time now is just not on our side. But we have been doing benchmarking exercises, but again, to encourage a culture of excellence in the municipalities. And we will continue to develop programs that will build the capacity of the councillors, as they are very instrumental. Chair, in the last financial year as well, we developed a health and hygiene strategy with the Department of Health, which we launched. The National Water Services Bill is in the final stages. It's going to be tabled to the policy board within the department, and it should be sometime next year. It should be tabled to Parliament. Okay. I will not be speaking to each and every highlight here, even though I would have liked to other highlights. Speak to our toll-free line, which is very useful. We're beginning to get a sense of what are the issues, what are the key issues that communities are worried about, and one of them is the drinking water quality. People are now aware of what the standards should be, and it's one of the issues that keeps coming in. Our learner program is growing, and I did indicate earlier on that we would like to assist our African countries to also drive this program. Okay. As our initiatives in SADC, Chair, I will not get into detail, but I would like to say this is one function that we are beginning to take very seriously and hoping it will yield results. Intergovernmental relations. So our ability to perform our functions depends on how well we work with other departments. And it is for that reason that we have invested a lot of energy into making sure that we strengthen the relations. We're very proud to say we have again managed to get funding for Masibamba next year, which is going to be about 100 million euros over a three-year period. So with that, within that program, we will be driving the initiative of Water for Growth and Development, which I believe is the vision of the department. So the acting DG will be talking about that at a later stage. Other achievements on the other slides. We have been very busy, Chair, and we hope, really, looking at all these initiatives, each province has its unique kind of initiative that we can learn from, and we have had a program where we facilitated the sharing of those lessons within various programs. So you find the Eastern Cape being excelling in, for instance, in gender, and you find Northern Cape excelling in operation and maintenance, and we are really encouraging that culture of performance and competition. The challenges. Initially, Chair, you asked a question, I think it was one member who asked whether we still believe a local government is able to deal with the current challenges. I must say this is a question of concern throughout government, and I would like to believe it is in that context that the Department of Local Government is reviewing its policies. There has been talk as well about one civil service And we're hoping that that will also address it. But from the side of Treasury as well, there has been serious concern about whether local government can really deliver according to its mandate. It is for this reason, Chair, that even though we say we have our, you know, our core functions, we need to be continuously sensitive to the fact that we may be asked to come in and assist local government. Not only because we are the leader of the sector, but basically because we are one government. So it is for this reason that we continue to look at creative ways of dealing with those dual responsibilities. In the past, we have raised concern about the sustainability of infrastructure. We have taken it to develop a strategy that would look at and address asset management throughout the country. That will address riots that the culture referred to, people getting water from cutting, people still getting water from drinking water with animals, despite the fact that there is infrastructure. We are hoping and we are aiming for the next financial year to convince Treasury to give us that responsibility and to give us money, in the same way as we managed to convince them to give us funding for the bus infrastructure. So, Chair, we're very busy. We're thinking ahead. We're saying to local government, let's not be territorial, because sometimes that happens. We are one government. We're working towards the same objectives. Let the department help where we can. Okay. The lack of an integrated approach to service delivery is a serious, serious issue, Chair. It featured very prominently in the recent Cabinet Lekgotla, and an instruction was given specifically to our department to work with housing, to work with land, to work with electricity, to make sure that there is, first of all, alignment to the targets. You know that we're talking about 208 for water, housing at the same time is talking about 2014 to address the informal settlement. How do you speak about having met our your target when other people in the informal settlements and water? So there is a strategy to deal with it. Cost recovery, say if municipalities could improve on their revenue collection just by 50% of their capital costs could be covered from that revenue. So this is really a matter of concern, and we, even though it is receiving attention, we believe it requires much more attention from the side of local government. It's something that is outside our sphere of control. Lack of capacity, that will remain the challenge, and some of these challenges really, and recommendations, these are the things that we do have programs on each and every one of these. For instance, our initiatives to source capacity from countries like Brazil, India, there is some work in that regard. Having said that, we are competing not only with the private sector in the country, but with other countries like Dubai, who are also involved in major infrastructure development for the expertise we require. That will bring me to the conclusion of my presentation and the sense of opportunity.
Thank you, Chair, Co-Chair, and honourable members. Like the DDG, I'll try and be brief. And I think also like the DDG, we also have some positive reporting for you this afternoon. I'd also like to start with the issues that were raised by the Chair and Honourable Mswati regarding external transformational restructuring and issues of raising awareness of forestry as a career. I think we should note the concern from the Chair, and it's a concern shared by the Department, that the way the Category 8 plantations were restructured did not necessarily meet the objectives of government. I think we can safely say, had we had the forestry chart in place 5 years ago when the first transactions were being done, they would have looked very different and perhaps would have achieved very different things. Having said that, we're trying with the remaining package. I'm referring there to Singizi, Siyakubega, Matola, and NTO. The remaining package of Kumasi land, we're trying through engagements with DPE to ensure that that restructuring process actually does conform with the chart, and we will use the chart as the yardstick to say how much benefit does that really achieve. And likewise, the remaining Category B and C plantations that DWAF is still responsible for will also be restructured in a way that directly supports the transformation and growth initiatives imperatives contained in the Charter. So similarly with natural forests, which are also a constitutional obligation that we need to devolve these to more appropriate levels of management. Again, I agree, I don't think there's a need to revisit the constitution, but perhaps we need to revisit our targets. Our targets tend to be time-based, and I think we should rather be defining them based on the capacity of recipient agencies at provincial government level and even local government level to manage those assets. And that, in fact, is something that GRAS has done, taking an in-principle decision only to transfer as and when capacity to manage those assets. Coming to the issue of raising awareness among scholars around forestry as careers, there's been extensive work carried out by forestry in terms of interacting with schools. We actually visit schools as GRAS, our regional offices and even from head office, to promote forestry as a career. There's a career expo that was held in the financial year in which we're reporting. We had 6,000 scholars attend the Arbor Week celebrations in that financial year, and within those celebrations is a very big highlight or focus on forestry as a career. We also engage extensively with the Department of Education to influence the school curriculum to make more reference to forestry, and we engage extensively with tertiary education institutions who offer forestry courses, both in terms of curriculum development, but also in terms of providing bursaries for deserving scholars, particularly from historically disadvantaged backgrounds. So there's a lot going on in that regard. Thanks, Chair. Then coming to the actual achievements, if we can just go back a couple of slides. Thanks, Akita, to the charter. Thank you very much. In terms of the target in the annual report, in the strategic plan, the target was really to have the approved broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Charter developed and implemented in partnership with the sector. We're pleased to report that the charter was in fact agreed in March of 2007. There was also progress on the development of the user guide and companion document, which is a really important document. The reason why we're mentioning it here is the charter might seem very confusing to people unless there's actually an explanatory and accompanying document that explains that it is not just about the transformation of the sector, but actually that it's the transformation of the sector through growth and development. So this document is simultaneously the National Forestry Growth and Development Strategy. That's an important distinction to make. I'm also going to just try and pick up the highlights. I've made the point, the very last point, just that DTI previously had the mandate to ensure that there was a growth and development strategy implemented for forestry. We are now responsible for that, and we have mainstreamed the recommendations from the work done by DTR, which we also participated into the charter. In terms of challenges for the charter, there's some challenges around reaching agreement in terms of capacity and the time frame with other stakeholders for implementation, namely the sector and in fact other government departments with respect to implementation. Those deal with things like land reform and funding and issues like that. We can deal with them a little further on in the presentation. Then another one of the pillars underpinning the charter is the issue of enterprise development. The target in the strategic plan was that existing and potential economic opportunities were developed to contribute to broad-based Black economic empowerment. In this regard, we launched 7 new projects and supported other existing projects. For the full list, I would refer the honourable members to page 83 of the annual report. That gives the full detailed list of projects that we were involved in. In terms of numbers of beneficiaries in those projects, there were 1,266 participants in the project, the majority of whom are women, 50% of whom are women. There's also been a number of other plans developed, in particular at Ngome, the essential oil study and the baseline study on Amatola and Tatavonda forest. That's on the FED side. The other thing is we agreed to an MOU for FED intervention in the Limpopo between LIPSA, GRAS and Forestry South Africa, and specifically in the Vembe and Mopani Small Growers Initiative. We also negotiated an MOU with the Indigenous Knowledge Systems of South Africa and the South African National Biodiversity Institute, specifically looking at the role of forests in supplying medicinal plants, and in particular endangered red dartswood species. Challenges around there, the issues there are funding, two elements. One, securing funding for FED, both in terms of the charter, and also mechanisms for disbursing funding. We've encountered some of the similar problems that the DDG region is referring to in terms of the Resource for Farmers grant and enabling provisions in legislation to ensure that happens. But we're also pleased to report that this year we're managing to make some progress in addressing those issues. Briefly on afforestation, another key element underpinning the successful implementation of the charter. The targets were that phase two, in fact, the prime targets were that phase two of the Eastern Cape SEA should be completed. The set of the forestation potential maps should be produced for the remaining province. Increased levels of community-based deforestation, those were what we were hoping to see achieved and were in fact achieved. And that the time taken for processing stream flow reduction activity licenses should be reduced. In terms of what was achieved, we finalized the SEA in the Eastern Cape. Maps were prepared for forest resources for the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal. We initiated the process to identify forestation potential in the other provinces. And the forestation maps were produced for the district municipalities in Water Management Area 12 in the Eastern Cape. And the Eastern Cape government established the Afghisa company to inter-ADA address new forestation, but also more broadly to address forestry enterprise development in terms of the charter and in terms of the initiative identified in Afghisa itself. Applications were received in terms of progress for 5,500 hectares for new forestation, which tells us that the awareness raising was successful. In the previous year, we'd only had 800 hectares applied for, and in the year that we're reporting on, we had 5,500 hectares worth of applications. And the licensing time has decreased dramatically in the Eastern Cape for licensing applications. I think it's been almost halved. In terms of challenges, one of the challenges, particularly in the Eastern Cape, relates to the issue of land tenure. This poses a challenge in respect to larger applications, and it's addressing some of the unresolved land rights, but also addressing issues like the Communal Property Land Rights Act, and the imperatives associated with that legislation. Then coming to sustainable forest management of the remaining grass plantations, which I alluded to in the beginning, the targets there specifically were to reduce the temporary unplanted areas by 20%, try and limit fire damage to a maximum of 1% of the total estate, increase productivity by 5%, and try and manage the state plantations using the criteria, indicators and standards that were developed for sustainable forest management under the National Forest Act. The achievements there, we almost reached the TUP target. We reached 18% decrease in temporary unplanted areas. There was a 5% increase in productivity, some of which was achieved through windfalls, but nonetheless that was achieved. And self-audits have been conducted on most estates using the criteria, indicators and standards, which suggests that the management of the remaining grass assets is systematically improving. Some of the challenges specifically relating to the remaining category B and C plantations, we're sitting with 51% vacancies on many of those estates, and the vacancies tend to be in the wrong occupational classes. We have vacancies at a management level, and this speaks against the issues that we've been discussing today around availability of skills for the forestry industry and water industry, the water sectors, and there's vacancies down at general worker level, and those are challenges that the department is addressing in a couple of ways. In this financial year. Funding for the rehabilitation, although that has been secured through savings within draft for this year, so that was a challenge at that time. And then there was significant area lost to fire. 9,115 hectares were lost to fire in that financial year. And then, Chair, coming I think to the last, almost the last, the transfer of state forests, we touched on it earlier on, the targets in that financial year was to conclude the stakeholder agreement for the transfer of Mbazwan and Manzungwenya plantations up in northern KZN. The delegational assignment agreements in place with relevant agents for natural forests, and finalise the release of land at St. Lucia to Isimvelo KZN Wildlife. What we achieved was agreement on Mbazwan and Manzungwenya, endorsed by all the stakeholders. The assignment agreement and presidential proclamations for the Eastern Cape and Western Cape were completed, and we released 98,000 hectares of land to Isimvelo KZN Wildlife in the Sulusha area. And also over 450,000 hectares of land were released to South African National Park. Challenges with respect to those transfers is ensuring that the transfer of the KLF, that's the Kamati land forest that I referred to earlier, maximizes those BBBW opportunities. Payment of the lease rentals, which we're still holding, and linked to that, the establishment of a trust to hold those rentals on behalf of land reform beneficiaries. Coming to salt and forest fire management, which is another one of those challenges that was identified on page 85 of the annual report, the targets which established FPAs in all the priority fire risk areas, the salt fire management strategies were to ensure the salt fire management strategies were effectively implemented by the FPAs, Capacity building for registered FTA supported, and that speaks to the issue that David spoke to earlier on about the training that was provided. In compliance and enforcement with the National Felt and Forest Fire Act, and negotiations on cross-border fires were to be initiated. In terms of what we achieved, we registered 80 FTAs in that year, and fire management strategies for them were also registered. These are important to have them registered when there are disputes with respect to fire and competing claims. We conducted monitoring and evaluation of 24 of the registered FPAs, and that's the geographical spread of the areas in which that M&E took place. Approximately 150 stakeholders, including fire protection officers and chief fire officers and local government officials, were trained in respect of the provisions of the Act. And several meetings were held to conclude memoranda of understanding with Mozambique, Swaziland, Lesotho, and Botswana. And Namibia. Challenges with respect to felt and forest fire management, there were some technical problems still persisting with the National Fire Danger Rating System. And that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Yesterday, if only people knew about fire danger rating, you wouldn't have had Outgang going missing by 3 o'clock. Everyone ran. I don't know where did they run to, home and everywhere else. Entire Outgang was. I think you must launch the campaign of fire danger rating in Outgang, then we wouldn't have had the situation that we had yesterday, where people just simply did all sorts of very funny things. Thank you very much, DDGs, and those standing in for some DDGs also on the services, the resource, forestry and health and fire. Honourable members, it is over to yourself to engage the service delivery part of the annual report. Honourable Arndt, you had your hand up earlier on.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Followed
by Honorable Sibiani. Three presentations in a row, so I don't know if I can get my notes in order. But while I'm doing that, I'd like to say that the question of consultants I just wanted to speak on keeps on popping up year after year, and also in more than one presentation. So what I wanted to say, Chairperson, the issue of consultants is not that there should never ever be consultants used. I don't think it's that. I stand and for instance, public-private partnerships, the triple P's, that's government policy, and much to do with the private sector, it's inevitable that consultants are going to be used. It is rather, I say, the money that goes to consultants. What does the money buy? If the money buys a delivery on the ground, then we can actually live with it. Because every year when the question of consultants come up, it is about what the amount of money spent to consultants, what did it buy? You know, so I don't think the department should feel that if committee is saying not a single consultant should ever be used, I think the committee is rather focused on every time we spend money on consultants, on a consultancy, what did the rand in the cent buy? And I think it should be used in that light. I just thought I'd mentioned it. This came up again in the water services presentation. Chairperson, in relation to the water resource management, I know the... I'm still going to ask a question. I was just wondering, Chairperson, whether the department in working towards catchment management areas notes the potential disjuncture that are emerging between water resource management and water services provision. And I'm asking this question in relation to the current mismatch between administrative and natural catchment boundaries. And I wondered if the department could maybe elaborate on it as to how did you deal with that situation. And just my last question is in relation to water services. As I'm concerned, Chairperson, it's the poorest of the poor in the rural areas that should be a focus of service delivery. Now, they're always poorest of the poor. If you look at the policy documents, of notice that by the government. The provision are always made and put to the poor in the rural areas are always mentioned in all policy documents. However, when it comes to provision of water, it is precisely the poorest of the poor that will not be able to afford it if the provision of water is linked to the connection fees and the full cost recovery in terms of tariffs. I was wondering, Chair, in relation to that, how is the wealth in supporting local government such as addressing this particular issue? I hope it's another answer your question. Thank you, Chair.
About the establishment of Bushbuck Water Board in the Arab. I engaged myself with people in this area. They also have that concern. I don't know if it was part of the answer. It would appear that it is being punished because of the municipality having failed to pay 26 million to the board. We don't know what the recommendations are going to be, but that is a concern. Another concern is that the department has a duty to supply water for economic development. We have a dam closer to us, which is Plateri Dam, and it's mainly used for sporting, shooting boats and so on. What's closer to it, the dam, there are communities who also need water. If they say they are going to get the people water from the nearer dam, I say that water is for domestic needs, but definitely there's a need for economic development, and the Plateri Dam is just enough. Those are the two concerns, and my question is, what is the state of Engodama Trust as far as forest is concerned?
The last question? Something on the trust? Yeah. Just repeat the period here.
So, I haven't heard anything about the state of Engodama Trust where it still exists or not in the future. Never mentioned anywhere.
Okay, thank you. Water services. I was just going to, this morning on the news, I heard that, and I'm not sure if it was in the Eastern Cape, but it seems that the Department of Science and Technology is assisting the Department of Education on water provision to schools, water and sanitation. And I was just very keen, you know, whether you would know about that, because I didn't mention the Department of Water Affairs. And, you know, if you can just maybe sort of find out about that. Maybe if it is successful, surely then other departments, you know, life science and technology in other provinces could also. I'm not sure if it's a pilot project, one school or 10 schools, whatever, but it was just on the radio this morning. The other thing is just on the mentioning of the working for water and the alien species that were cleared that you mentioned on the 800 and almost 29,000 hectares. I never clearly have had an answer from the department over 3 years whether that is that a one-off permanent clearance on these number of hectares, or do you have to go back from time to time? And I've always asked the question also about the hyacinth matter on, for example, in Limpopo on the Letaba River, which they used to put the little beetles, if you would remember, and I never thought it was so successful. It just takes too long, and to know what's happening there. And the third question I would really would also appreciate is the DDG time frame they put on the investigations on the water boards in Bangala and just a useful example. So if you leave it open, it is a long term investigation, but if you put no time frame, it would take even longer. But and then just as far as three, I also saw on the news on 50/50 one of those programs on Sunday night where they actually spoke about some case with forestry on top of this and it's taking or absorbing all the water and that they are instead of closing that case, they're actually watering it by now, by hand. And that they are pleading for taking away the forestry. So I'm not sure if you are aware of that and whether we should look after that. And the second question is, on the issue of foul fires, I am obviously from Limpopo, as you know we had a lot of foul fires next door in Mpumalanga and Limpopo. And my concern is always with this, what do you call voorbrand in English, provisional fire. The issue on the owners of the national and provincial departments on their roads that do not do fire breaks next to those roads. How is the department dealing with that? Thank you.
So your name, isn't it?
Thank you very much. I thought you were recognizing Sandra. Okay, no, thank you very much. In fact, my question is, or clarification, I would actually ask for clarification because here on the sanitation, irrigation, budget irrigation, slide number 6, it is indicated here that there is still the backlog was still high on the 31st of March 2011, which was at 1H301. So my question is now, because this was actually the figures which was arrived at the time in March, so I just wanted to find out, are we advancing towards reaching the target, because it is supposed to be done by the end of 2007. So I just wanted to find out if we are just about to reach that target. And the other question that I will also need to find out is with regards to the basic water. Here it is said that 80% of the people who are in this infrastructure are covered with regards to that. But it is also saying that those, my question actually is based on those who do not have infrastructure. Then I basically go to the government. But those people who do not have infrastructure, they also qualify to get this if they don't have infrastructure. What is the plan from the department to cover those people so that they can be accommodated? And another one is with regard to the schools program. I said that there was a quad and funding from NT to help the schools with the backlogs with regards to sanitation and water. But here it also indicates that the program is a 3-year program, but it doesn't indicate how many schools are still left out and how far is the program with regards to that. So it is 3 years. Is it in the middle now, or is it still starting? Or are they, where are they with regards to that? And the last one is with regards to the license. Water use license. And here it is also saying that the guidelines have been developed. So I just want to find out, because this actually is a process that actually those people who are studying there and those people are actually in need of these licenses. Just want to know as to whether the process finalized of each, how long is it going to take for a person who is applying for startup license. Have you actually come to the conclusion that the person, if the person wants that license, how long that person must take? What are the processes? What is the plan that is in that regard? Thank you.
All the members that are going to speak now, can we come a little bit back to the annual report again? Because we are now starting to venture into generally speaking oversight questions, I don't see them yet in the annual report at all. So it's not meant for you on the ball somewhere. I'm just asking if you and everyone else can assist to come back to the annual report, because many of those other issues we deal with the department as they're here before us on a weekly basis. But are these things in the annual report?
Some of my views in the annual report, some are not. Typically, this is the first start of the forest year. This is not in the annual report. The question about the application of new licenses. My question is, has the question around carbon credits arise with the Department of Forestry? Because I believe it's a new thing, and it's to do with global warming and things like that. Has the department that come to their attention? But what really interests me, Chairperson, is when the presenter talks about savings by the department. Now, I'm not sure how can a department save money, because they're there to develop. Saving to my money not used, used for something else now. Okay, I just want clarification. Where does the saving come from? Because it's not a private entity where you have to report to the shareholders savings and pay it out in dividends.
Can I ask Jeff about this to answer that question? He loves the savings.
I want to come to water resource management. Now, one of the in the annual report, one of the challenges they raised is the transformation of the irrigation board to water users association, which still remains a challenge. I just want to know what are they doing about it, because in my own constituency, me and Honorable Sarah went to a irrigation board at Kirkwood. And there are huge problems here, where the board itself are manipulating the water quantities. My question there is, how far are they with this transformation, and what oversight does the department do over these irrigation boards? Because I get the impression that, they got carte blanche, they can do what they want, nobody's checking up on them. And there are some of these emerging farmers who have got water rights here has been sold off because they owe the water board money. And I just wanted to know something about that. Then also getting our NGOP taking parliament to the people, to Limpopo. And I think our follow-up, we got to a farm where one of the farm dams was broken. And that was during a flood 5 years ago, a couple of years ago, and this a farmer is in trouble because he hasn't got water. Now, what does the department do about to assist that farmer whose dam was damaged during floods? And is there any assistance for them? But to come back to the annual report, one of the outputs that they say there is 500 new resource farmers granted financial support with subsidy transfer. And what is very interesting, the actual performance is the final draft of regulations for financial support in resource poor farmers completed and 69 harvesting tanks constructed. Now, that is very poor performance. What is the reason for that? And then my last question has to do also with three basic water. At the other admission, they say that they are performing very poorly on the three basic water. My question is, what are they doing? Because 2008, the deadline is coming, they're closer and closer to us. And what are the departments doing so that we can obtain that? Relating to this, the support that they are giving to local government, which is also raising the annual report, what are they doing to jack up them other than providing consultants to them? What are they doing? And I read it this morning, the annual report does not talk about Project Consolidate. What is the department doing that? Because that is where the delivery takes place of free basic water. Thank you, Chief.
Chairperson, my question arises as a result of the noted commitment of the department here. And the following question, therefore, how many plantations are still due to be transferred to the rightful owners of the land on which the forest has been established, in which provinces, and what are the challenges?
My apologies again, the thing in front of me. The minister said she couldn't wait for your enemy, so she left. You left before, there was an agreement that both of you had to stay all the time, but you didn't honor. Or he left outside. Okay.
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, thanks. That probably I came on time. I was actually booked down in another meeting. But thanks that I find the people still around. Jefferson, earlier on I did raise questions which were actually contained in the annual report. And fortunately I came on time when they were actually talking about firefighting. Now, it is amazing enough to hear the firefighting that has actually been so much spoken about. My neighbor here made mention of the Voorbrand, which is now mainly done on those farmers who actually deal with the gains and many other things. But my dilemma is that the Voorbrand is not the solution. If I may have my own suggestion, is that I think if on the borders of any enclosure, if you plow on the border so that there's no grass right in the immediate proximity, so that with those who are throwing cigarettes, they cannot catch any fire because it will be a plowed field on the bottom on the border, then any grass that is nearby, if it's cut, then so that you can prevent all these the plantation fields, where we have lost so many hectares. The preventative measure that you have, if we could probably address on those issues, either than the poor brand. I'm making a suggestion, what I think that would be probably of a meaningful preventative measure. The other issue, Chairperson, it was also when I spoke about water, drinking water. Now, let me be specific. I am from Gauteng. In the place called the New Eerste near Pretoria, people living in those areas in that New Eerste, they don't have water. They did, however, had some water reservoir, these plastic water reservoir, which were actually given to them. They destroyed. The reason being that, they said, water in those plastic containers
there were worms inside. So they could not drink it. And they said, look, you're not going to waste our time. I think your co-chairperson raised an issue of trucks that are running in the township, which you probably appreciate. But it's not solving the problem. Because it's during the day when it comes there. People who are working coming back at 6 o'clock, there are no trucks. And that problem still exists in that TSRA. They have now, however, petitioned the parliament with various services that they have. They have spoken to the minister. I know some of the function chairperson. It is a provincial function. It is a local function. They have spoken to all those people, and nothing is helping them. Now, they have petitioned now, the parliament, that can we get the response? Now, we, the people from the National Council of Provinces, we deal directly with the provinces. We bear the brunt. They have now written a letter saying to me, we have petitioned to the parliament. What are you doing? Are you also having tender death here? Now, how do we solve these problems where there is no water? And let me elaborate on the very same yesterday. The boreholes that people have in the area, they're making money. Because they sell water now to the residents. I did not want to raise this thing when I had the public meeting because those people, if they close those boreholes and we don't sell water to them, well, how are they going to live? Well, we have to wait for that matter be resolved first before we can get to that, because there are people who are having boreholes, but they sell this water to the community. I don't know how rightfully they exercise it in terms of law, because any resources that it's water, whether it's river, whether it's anything, it belongs to it's a national competence. Now, one other thing that the last question is that, what are we doing with the water attachment? Rain season, I hear, a lot of water will be flowing into the river, they will be flowing down into the sea. Do we have any catchment water where we say, in the time of drought, then there will be enough water catchment? Thank you, Chairman.
I think just to conclude, let me repeat my question before lunch, and that is on both the water services, water resource and forestry and salt and fire. I think what the department should do is to assist us in relation to compare your reporting to what you said in your strategic plan the last time. You know, if you go through them, then, and I do think you've got to help us to, by the time that we finally put our own report together, if you cannot now give that, maybe you should assist us to say to us where you have not been able to capture it in your own presentation to maybe attempt to speak to it. I mean, for example, in water resource, you said that you were going to implement the Olifant Water Resource Development Project, river diversion for the Whip Dam by June 2006. Maybe you've done it, maybe you haven't. When we were there, we saw some markings on the road and so on. And this, very importantly also, a progress report on the water allocation reform. You have decided to opt for you took certain areas, I can't get to them in now. Yeah, you took certain areas here in the Western Cape, for KwaZulu-Natal and so on. What progress is happening in that regard? You said that your target is next year, but surely by now, if your target is in March 2008, with a few months left to March 2008, is that happening? But also, I think you should assist us to tell us, do you think it was the right route to go? Because water allocation reform is really a countrywide thing. It's very difficult to deal with it just in certain areas. I mean, I've seen some of the people on the West Coast when they brought them together recently. And so I can go through all of that. You said your water resource infrastructure branch will be fully established by ring-fencing all related functions in a self-sufficient limit last year, already in April last year. Now, there might have been difficulties because it was not a very straightforward issue, this thing of, because you haven't brought the bill even to Parliament. But again, you said in March 2006 you were going to do that. Up to March 2008, established, you know, the integration of the branch with the TCPA. So I don't want to go through all of them. I think you do have your own strategic plan. You'll see the targets that you told us, many of them, capacity building, all of these guidelines and many wonderful things, and not in a research thing that you said. Water services, of course, they're a very, more or less a shortage list. On forestry, you told us that you were going to have minimum standards in the sector. You were going to have national system developed in operation regulations. You were going to publish a regulation also this year. And so on and so on and so on. I'm not going to take you through each one of them. Fire awareness campaign implemented by March 2007. We had all the fires this year, which means that this is going to be a regular feature now. You know, the way the fires went up to now in the country. So I really just want to ask, Bob, I think you've got to help us with, you know, because you present the strategic plan to us. Just in case you don't remember, there it is. You presented all of this to us. You see, we don't hear you in your annual report. Some of it, DVD region. Some of the things you said in your other report, it doesn't reflect here. So we don't understand, why do you separate them? Why do you bring them in a separate report? Why doesn't it find its way into here? That's the first one that I want to say. And I'm saying this because if you look at the headings that you've taken in your annual report, water services, key outputs and service levels, strategic objective to ensure that all people in South Africa have access to a functioning basin water supply facility. Well, it's a good heading. Doesn't necessarily refer to what you have here. If you've changed thought along the way, I think it helps us to say. Let me use the last example also. You brought out, rightfully so, a very good strategic water services framework. Again there, you spelled out in that lovely little booklet, you're very nice. So you see, you can carry it everywhere now because it makes it nice and small. You carry it in the pocket. But again here, what you've done is that you said that you put targets for access to services, you put targets to education and health, you put targets to three basic services, you put targets to institutional development and performance. Again, it would be good if you could tell us, for example, all bucket toilets are eradicated by 2006, in 13 years, not 7, all clinics have adequate and safe water supply. Maybe you've got a new strategic framework that you have put together. But I mean, this is the recent one that you have handed out even with the minister's budget service. And it reflects lots of targets here. And I think we will be keen to find out how far are we doing. Everything on institutional reform, water allocation reform, all of those kind of things. Okay, I'm not going to take you through that. I think the point is the department must help us. How do we, because we are unable to measure the things that you say you're going to do, because it means if in your strategic plan you said all of these things, it means that you have allocated money for all of that. Now, if you haven't spent the money on what you have said in your strategic plan in 2006, now what did you spend the money on? A good case in point is the emerging farmers. This issue was in the last annual report also. The committee took a resolution that says that a the thing that we dealt with. You remember we had all of them here, the small emerging farmers. And then the department responded to the committee's recommendation. And then the response was that there's a regulation that seems to be sorted out. They couldn't spend the money because there's a regulation. Now we see in the annual report two different things that have been said. One part of it says in the annual report that we're going to still have a regulation, and then we have done, you know, which one is it? So I think if you can assist us with that also, because I think this aspect of the resourcing the poor farmers is got to get it right. For lots of reasons, it's got it right. Poverty alleviation, economic development, everything else. We've got to get that right. So I think, let's end it there. I'm asking you to respond, Honourable Van Rooyen. You said you've got a small sentence.
Yes, Chairman, I've got a question, but I don't know, I want to ask it now before you close the meeting, because it was raised this morning during the financials. This morning it was mentioned that performance allowances were not paid, they were put on hold by the department. But if you look at the annual report under note number 4, they have there got an amount of 147. Just get my bearings here. Okay, yeah, 146. Note 4, compensation to employees, salaries and wages. There is a performance award of 11 million rand paid. Now, where does that 11 million rand come, all of a sudden come into play? But if you also look at page 153, under note 23, employee benefits, there was a performance award of 5 million paid, 5.7. I'm confused. Thank you, Chairperson.
You asked the department to clarify and actually hop back to the other part of the finances, and I just want to clarify. They said that this morning they said that they will take action against those that have transgressed. It didn't spell out. Did it happen or when is it going to happen and so on. So I think if we can throw that one into the bag also to be answered. And that was really in relation to what the Auditor General said and where there hasn't been compliance. I think that one wasn't also answered. Honourable Members, I think let's give the Department an opportunity to answer and then we'll make some closing remarks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will start by responding to the issue of the performance bonuses that were awarded, and my colleagues will respond to the other issues. The amount of money or the figure that appears in the annual report, Chairperson, is the bonuses that were awarded to staff from level 12 and below. The emphasis that was made this morning by the Minister was that people who are responsible for managing the department from level 13 and upwards did not receive any bonuses, because by implication it means that they failed in their responsibility as managers in the department. I will hand over to DDG Regions and my colleague from Forestry to respond to the other issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Chair, we have noted your comments on the format of the report itself. Our approach is that when we draw up the annual report, we are guided by the set plan. And when we compile the annual report itself, we focus only on issues that we believe are of strategic importance. So we know in the process, they highlight some of the successes or some of our achievements, because we believe we really have to, it has to be a very high level kind of report. However, we've noticed that we will continue to make improvements in the quality of the report itself. Use of consultants. I think the concerns raised by various committee members are valid when it comes to use of consultants. Much as we are justified and we have no option in other cases, there is the tendency to over-rely on consultants. And our CFO has been very strict in each and every submission that comes before the GCC. He needs to be informed what plans are in place to look at long-term capacity building. So it's a matter that we also attend to. Concern was raised around misalignment or disjuncture between water services and water resources with regards to the boundaries of the field. This is a matter that the department is looking into. In the organizational institutional realignment program, we also looking that. In fact, we are even taking it further to say that we really need all the 19 CMAs. What can we do to make sure that they are overlapped in terms of political boundaries within the country? So it's a matter under investigation. A question was also raised around cost recovery and what the department is doing in that regard. So in our efforts to support municipalities and to build or to improve on their institutional capability to perform their functions, we also assist them with developing business plans just to run the business, to realize that providing water services to communities, it has to be approached in a business kind of way in order for the municipality to be able to provide free basic water, to be able to generate revenue. So we assist in the development of the tariff policies, but this is really a function that local government, TLG National, is also driving from their side. Chair, we have further noted the concern around this establishment of the water boards, and we need to say this process is also a provincial, is also led by the relevant MSCs of local government, and we are hoping that the right decision that is informed by the needs of the province itself will come out of that process. It is for that reason that the minister decided to involve and let the MEC drive the process. Use of dams, multi-purpose use of dams. We have had a problem, and it's part of the previous kind of apartheid planning, where you have dams that were used for only specific purposes. It's a matter that is being attended to. For instance, in KZN, you have dams that were mainly built for agricultural purposes. Currently, the department, through the infrastructure bulk program, will be addressing some of those challenges to make sure that there is connection and communities around the dams also benefit from the resource. Providing of water to schools, we will follow up with that initiative by DST, because the DST usually needs in terms of technology, appropriate technology. So we will be following up on that. But also maybe to clarify that we were given 940 million over a 3-year period. And for the current year, we're only focusing on eradicating the clinic backlog. It's only next year that we will be dealing with the schools program. But there are currently programs that are being run by the Department of Education where they do have funding. Yes. Clearance of alien species, yes, you're quite correct, Honorable Member. If there won't be money for follow-up clearance, then it would be a waste of state money to clear in the first place. So there is an initial clearing, and within a specified period, there also has to be follow up here. We are having serious challenges around water needs. First of all, it's an expensive exercise, expensive challenge to deal with, but we're trying to, there is a lot of research that the program is undertaking where we're looking at use of biological methods to deal with the water, but it is a challenge, and I wouldn't say at this stage it's a challenge that we've managed to be in control of. However, we're trying our level best. Time frame for investigation of water board, I've noted that we will attend to it. And there was also a question around a sanitation target. I will be speaking more to this program next, tomorrow. But just to say, we're working very hard to make sure that we meet this, the 207 target. And in as far as process is concerned, I would say we are on track. Free basic water. It is a concern that those who do not have infrastructure are in fact punished for it. The fact that they don't have infrastructure and the fact that they also don't can't even benefit from the policy itself. The only way of addressing this, especially in rural areas, is to speed up the rate of delivery. In some cases, municipalities have come up with creative ways of providing, especially people in informal settlements, and that would deal with the question that was raised around ESPs, where resources, available resources in the country are a constraint. It is a fact that there will be communities who are without service because there is so much money that's available within a financial year. The licensing, a study was conducted to look at the average time it takes to process some of the licenses. And the time itself varies depending on the complexity of the exercise, the use into which water will be put, and the sensitivity of the catchment itself. And there were ridiculous cases where the period had even taken 3 years, but the new set target is an average of 7 months. It doesn't mean all licenses will be completed within 7 months. Some may take less, some may take a little bit more. However, we're saying as a performance indicator, 7 months is the target. Transformation of water is a challenge. This is a challenge. It's one of those areas where, as a department, we're saying we need to review whether what we're doing, even though it's policy of government, what we're doing is really achieving the objectives of transformation. The issues that were raised by the Honourable Member are effects, and it is for this reason that the Minister has taken a decision to say this process must come to a halt. So it's going to form part of the organization of institutional realignment, because we'll be looking at progress to date, what has been achieved on the ground, and come up with ways of improving the situation and making sure that the principles of transformation, which are the fundamental drivers of this problem, are not compromised. Oversight as well has been a problem, and I think I did mention earlier on that it's one of the areas where we need to improve. Support to resource performance. The reason why we have not performed here and why we have ridiculous figures as our achievements is the fact that even though we had allocated money, we could not disperse that money. We could not give it to and assist the poor farmers because we did not have the mechanisms, which are the regulations themselves. The regulations have been approved. Unfortunately, it had to be a long process because we had to go through consultation. All the process has been completed and they have been approved. So in the next financial year, we can... not long ago, about a month ago, but I'm going to have to give you a, but it has been, but it has, they have been approved. A free basic water, what are we doing to improve the target? Basically trying to speed up service delivery and making sure that we allocate the service, which is part of our support to local government. There are various interventions that we involve in supporting local government. Some of them don't even appear in our annual plan, but we would go to the extent of assisting getting people, first of all, through the project consolidate approach, getting people to sit down with the municipality, assist them in developing the policies. We have a checklist where we have assessed the capacity of each and every municipality and come up with municipal plans that are addressing the unique challenges of each municipality. All those plans are in place. They are not only useful to the department, but are also useful to the Department of Local Government, which is also responsible for supporting local government. Drinking water quality, and this is referred specifically to the challenges in EFC. I think I talked to that, Chair. It is illegal for people to use water that they get from the borehole. First of all, according to the legislation, each user, all the boreholes in the country should be registered. And it's something that I intend taking up and investigating. A question was also asked about what are we doing to harvest rainwater. This is a very, very valid question, and I think it has been coming. I did talk earlier on about the need for the department to come up with a strategy that will deal with how water can be used to eradicate poverty and support economic development in the country. And this program would form part of that strategy. We have to find ways of assisting communities to store water so that they can use for various poverty-related programs. Chair, you talk about water allocation reform and the fact that it only focused on various pilots. The criteria that we use to choose those pilot areas is, first of all, availability of water within the pilot itself. You know, some catchments are quite challenged when it comes to available water versus what is required. So that was the criteria. We have also realized that we cannot only focus on pilots on certain areas. This is a national program. The branch, yes, the branch is in existence. On the post they advertise, but the challenges were mainly around getting the right people. However, that has been achieved to a great extent. So the bill itself has been to a cabinet committee. I believe it's now it will be tabled in the National Water Resource. Yes. But it's been approved by the cabinet committee.
Thanks, Chair. I'll try and be brief. So responding to Honourable Sidiana's question around the Ngonyama Trust, it does still exist as well as the board that administers it. In terms of our National Forest Act, the Act recognises the Trust and the authority of the head of the Trust over forests involved. So all decisions taken by the Minister with respect to state forests on Ngonyama Trust land are taken with the consent of the head of the Ngonyama Trust itself. Coming to Honourable Van der Walt's questions with respect to the Sidwana Cave, we are aware of the issue, but it hasn't been formally raised with the department. Obviously, it's in the media at this time. So as soon as we receive a formal inquiry, we would engage with perhaps groundwater specialists, and we do have groundwater specialists who can test the veracity of the assertions. You know, it's not necessarily the trees above the cave. It might be trees upstream, or in fact, it might not be the trees at all. It could be general groundwater and water table issues that are impacting So I think it would be difficult to comment now, excuse me, without a scientific basis for doing so. With respect to Sulphide and Limpopo and Mpumalanga, and specifically the issue of national and provincial roads, what I'm about to say actually applies to district and municipal roads as well. All the road reserves, all of those authorities responsible for those road reserves are deemed to be landowners in terms of the National Salt and Forest Fire Act, and therefore, excuse me, they're obliged to comply with the legislation as well, which means they need to burn fire belts with all the adjacent landowners who are now inside of the road, outside of the road reserve. Typically what the Act provides for is that the landowner should indicate to the authority that they intend burning fire breaks, and they should agree on the time to meet and to burn the fire breaks and carry mutual costs. If there isn't compliance by the authority, that landowner can then burn the area themselves and recover some of the costs. So that is provided for. Coming to Honourable Van Rooyen's question, specifically with respect to new afforestation licences and issues of carbon credits, we are very aware of the carbon trading initiative. In fact, DEET are the designated national authority, and we as GRAF have representatives that sit on the Clean Development Mechanism Committee that considers projects for clean development mechanism, for clean development funding or carbon funding, and afforestation is one of those. Unfortunately, most of the new afforestation is targeted around communities and tends to be generally pretty small. So we're assisting communities in trying to form cooperatives, one, to qualify for carbon trading, but obviously those cooperatives offer the added advantages of economies of scale for input costs and marketing and so on. So there's a lot of value in helping communities organize themselves as a collective. In terms of the comment about savings, Honourable Van Rooyen is quite right. It's not savings in the accounting sense that this on the balance sheet is cash in the bank, but rather is under expenditure that we were able to get approval from Treasury to use with respect to funding FED. I think you'll also be pleased to know these are not massive amounts of under expenditure, it's an order amount of that would be used for FED projects. Coming to Honourable Masala's question around the land claims with respect to remaining areas, GRAF is currently still directly responsible for 44,000 hectares of plantations, all of which fall in communally owned land and therefore would be transferred to land reform beneficiaries, not necessarily under claims, but in terms of the Communal Property Land Rights Act. And the already transferred packages that I referred to, Singizi, Corbeng, and then the Category A packages, almost all of those areas are also under land claimants, and we are working very closely with the Chief Land Claims Commissioner to ensure the verification of those claims. So that firstly the lease rentals that we're holding in respect to those land reform beneficiaries which are referred to early on can be paid to them. And secondly, other imperatives in terms of the charter can start to be implemented. Then Honourable Nziti asked about firefighting and fire breaks. In fact, the practice that you suggested of ploughing does in fact take place in some instances. However, in terms of the best practice standards for forestry, this is only typically done in sandy soils and fairly gentle slopes, because in your more clay and loamy soils you have an issue of erosion if you plough. In those circumstances, then burning fire breaks is the preferred practice. And then, Chair, just lastly on issues that you raised around the minimum standards for sustainable forest management, publication of the regulations and fire awareness campaigns, they are all in the annual report. As you've noted, we just didn't put them up in the presentation because we're trying to focus on those issues that have direct bearing on economic and socioeconomic development. So that they are there, and we note the comments about the targets in the spectrum. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Chairperson. I was going to request your indulgence with honourable members on two questions that I could not respond to on administration. One was that question that the minister alluded to that an honourable member asked around the question of management of consultants and where a staff member has left the department in terms of the systems that were put in place. And the second one was around the question Honourable Member Van der Waals asked around those finite details of that spending on training. That with the permission of members, I can provide a written response to that one on the letter of that.
That should be okay because I'm sure that as we conclude our report as a committee, I think where we did not receive sufficient information from the department, we will obviously ask the department to supply us with further detail on whichever matter that we have not been able to. So I think you can take it in that same stride of forwarding it to the committee on that basis. It doesn't mean you're going to get away with a consultant issue just like that. It is not going to help the fact that you're going to try and duck that issue by writing a written response. We have other mechanisms in Parliament, how we put issues to the minister, like questions, like statements, and all of those things. It's not very easy to just duck them. Honourable members, I think we have, acting DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, for your indulgence. There is an outstanding issue that we did not respond to, that is proper issue to that commission. Yes. Did I repeat what I was saying? I should go ahead. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Earlier in the day, the Chairperson raised an issue about the department being required to respond to the issues that were raised by the hearing, the proper hearings earlier this year. We have been advised that the resolutions coming out of that hearing have not been tabled in Parliament yet. So we need guidance as to whether we should be responding. But be that as it may, we do have the report or the proceedings of that hearing. What we have noted as a department is that the concerns that were raised by SCOPA are in line with what you have raised here today. They refer to the inability of the department to manage its finances. They refer to the inability of the department to be able to report adequately when it comes to its assets. They refer to the inability of the department as the required human resources capacity to deal with the strategic plan as presented to you as a portfolio committee, as well as the co-chairperson, the select committee. So, Chairperson, seeing that you've given me an opportunity, I would like to say, if you allow me, we have really appreciated the opportunity that was given to us because it allows us to really reflect as a department. And we take note of the misalignment between, you refer to it as the technical quality of the report, is an issue that we will address. I can also, Chairperson, if you allow me, conclude by saying that our own observation is that as a department, our other major weakness is the support function. Administration has not been strategic support. It has been traditional support where your financial managers will simply take what is presented to them by line and implement without necessarily questioning whether there is proper compliance. So we will pay attention to that. And hopefully when we report in the next financial year, we would not be repeating ourselves on most of the issues that we raised here today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, thank you very much, Acting DG. I think to conclude today's session, and members are reminded that tomorrow we will deal with the law, the other important issue, and that is the target on sanitation. We are supposed to be having lots of MECs coming here, and we trust by now they've all agreed to come here to come and account to us on whether the targets are going to be reached. We've also asked the department to give us a snapshot of the preparations on the target on water next year. Not necessarily whether they're going to reach it, but what are the preparations that are being made with regards to that aspect? Because it's a very different target. It's a very complex target, as we have seen on our oversight. And I think we would want to benefit from the views of the department on what are the thinking that is going into the department with regards to achieving that target. We have, honourable members, of course, come to the end of the submission on the department's annual report. And I think just a few remarks. Well, of course, we started off the day. The minister briefed us. The acting DG gave us a review, and we went on with the rest. We do want to reiterate as a committee that we do need to get to this situation. We're not going to count anymore. Is it the third or the fourth or the fifth qualified audit? I think that the fact that the continuous qualified audit mitigates against the important work that the department is doing, generally speaking. And it comes across as if, I mean, we can say with pride, and I trust the other members will share with, will join with me in saying, well, there's been here and there incidences on water quality. But South Africa continues to be a country that stands out in the world insofar as water quality is concerned. Somebody took a chance today to bring bottled water into this meeting. It certainly doesn't happen in the portfolio committee. As you can see, I've got the judge in front of me. We continue to pride ourselves on the fact that, you know, there isn't a big question mark around that issue. And so you can carry on with water services. There's resource in the country. Of course, there are many people that still don't have access. And we think that we must try and challenge these two issues because the financial report mitigates, again, the other important things that the department. It then, at the end of the year, looks like, you know, to the department that doesn't know how to account, to the department that doesn't have staff to do it. You know, it brings all of those kind of things out. And I think the sooner we all again see how we overcome this aspect, I think the better for the department, because it's distracting us from the important work that needs to be done. It's distracting us from making sure that, you know, the dams that are there, more people must get access. It distracts us from making sure that water service authorities are getting the necessary assistance and support from the department. It distracts us from making sure that women can have better economic opportunities in forestry, and so on and so on and so on. And also it distracts us from the fact that, you know, we are not implementing the National South and Forest Act as it should be. The fact that this year, again, we saw fires in certain areas, if only there were lots of fire protection associations everywhere in the country, it helps us quite a lot to be addressing all of this. I do want to take the opportunity to say that Dwarf, please extend to everyone around the country. You've had unfortunate casualties that came out of the fires this year. Some people that were buried even over this weekend. There are others that are either still in hospital or have been discharged. And we have tried to communicate as a committee to express both our sympathy. We have done so in the National Assembly also. And please convey, because we did not get in each and every instance, the actual people's names to these personal letters. We will be happy if you can still bring that to the committee so that we can personally, on behalf of the committee, send to the families and friends both our condolences and a speedy recovery to everyone. So we really want to say that, you know, we don't want to be distracted by this thing anymore. Because this thing, this qualified audit just takes us away from all of these other issues. And I think the members were right today. You know, it's not, there are areas that the Auditor General point out, which I think we must all find solutions to. The committee will either take a decision again at the end of the submissions on whether we must continue the quarterly report from the department, or whether we should do something else. I don't know. The committee will take the final decision on that basis, on what recommendations are we going to do.
But if we take the recommendations that we must have quarterly reports, well, we will review ourselves. How do we do this quarterly report? Because we can't have the department coming with quarterly reports, and then at the end of it, they're still a qualified board. It means that the committee is also not playing a particular oversight role in making certain recommendations when we receive this. And equally so, on the department side, we may be not sufficiently looking at what are the difficult areas when we assist with the department every quarter, when we deal with both the finances and the human resources. Let me say equally on the human resources, it's a complex area. Of course, I think we should maybe together with the department see how do we engage with the public service in this instance. In our instance, there's a public service portfolio committee, there's a select committee in the NCOP. I think we should maybe start engaging at that level also to see, because I think there's a worthwhile fight, a worthwhile cause to be taken up in relation to the clear skill issue, and maybe get the compensation that kinesis, the police, and so on. Of course, we can't compare because really they have been not receiving the greatest of salaries over the years, and they will argue with us if you can't compare engineers and nurses. But we think there are avenues with regards to that aspect. We know it's not a water face and forest problem only, it's a problem in the public service. But in this instance, not every department is such engineers. And if there is a case to be made with regards to the aspect of engineers in this department. So I do want to say, honorable members, we think that we should, because the issues that I'm raising now is we are 7 months into the new budget year. What is it that we need to do for the remaining, well, now, October, between now and when the minister speaks in February? What is it that is going to happen now between these few months, with the holiday in between, to ensure that work doesn't come back next year? Because really the test is in this few months, CFO, is there something happening in this few months, or something has started to happen already? We would like to believe something has started to happen already, because you did say so in your report yesterday. You started to address this thing with gaps and bears and skills training and all of these different things. I do want to say that we appreciated once when the department brought all the regional people, when Trevor Bowser was still doing the reporting. It benefited them quite a lot. It benefited the committee when all of them came here and they saw that we're really serious about this qualified audit. And we could engage quite sufficiently with all the regional people in one meeting talking about the financial situation of the department. I want to end off by saying that I think we should find a different way as a committee, of course, where the Auditor General says that you have not complied with the Act. We will have to go and see in there what is in there, because we are legislators and we must see if there is, if there are transgressions like that, what are the remedies that we need to do. The remedies, of course, are in the Public Finance Management Act. Let me lastly end off by saying that with regard to the other areas, we appreciate and value to us that your reporting side on your non-financials, the water services, the water resource, water, health and fire, forestry and so on. Yes, we see your attempts in making sure that you stay on course. The difficulty is the mismatch in the annual report not necessarily reflecting you know, what you have decided to do and what you are doing. And again, thank you very much for taking this issue of the water board, not the water, yes, the water board in particular, for dealing with the water board in the annual report that you have done, because we think that that helps us. When the water boards appear before us in March or February, March next year, then at least assist the committee in seeing what the department has done in the annual report this year, and what are the issues that we should further engage with. It's been a source of great concern of the committee when we dealt with the water boards this year, and we really saw that, you know, there's quite a lack of dwarfs on oversight on the water boards. That doesn't mean that the water boards are all in serious trouble and nothing is happening. It is simply how do we manage these institutions. In
closing off, we would like to invite, not invite, we would like to ask the department to partner with us also in relation to your, what are we going to do with all these institutions? They are important, and we think that the view of the portfolio committee must be sought on this issue, not necessarily on Bushbuck and Isangala, but on the fact that there are all these institutions, and we think we should be granted the opportunity to share our views on the institutional arrangements in this regard, and so too on the issue of forestry. We looking forward to having this discussion on sanitation and water tomorrow. We will of course put together a report, forward that to do the necessary that we normally do. Acting DG and your team, honourable members, everyone else, all the guests that are still here. Thank you very much for today. The House is adjourned. Thank you.